industry. And that has to be, I think, deeply contested. It's not just some right-wing people who have that view. This is the view of the Biden administration. This is the view of neoliberals around the world. They don't want to allow Africa to industrialize. And that's a very important legacy of Lumumba and Nkrumah, this demand and fight that we must be able to produce our own commodity chain. We can't just be, in a sense, the sluice for raw materials.
Vijay, we want to thank you so much for being with us again. Patrice Lumumba would have been 99 years old today. Vijay Prashad is director of the Tricontinental Institute for Social Research, where his new in-depth article is headlined, "The Congolese Fight for Their Own Wealth." Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for Director of Development. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
KBOO, Portland.
Did you know that KBOO podcasts all our news and talk shows?
You can find the podcast on KBOO's website, kboo.fm, on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Just search for your favorite show and hit subscribe to get all the latest episodes downloaded to your favorite device.
Or search for KBOO on iTunes, Google Play to get all the KBOO podcasts.
Comes to town with his wagon broken down. The farmer is.
Tune in to The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your tasty fruits and vegetables in your home garden.
There is a monthly garden stumper, calendar of gardening events. You can even call in with your gardening questions.
That's The Dirtbag every second Wednesday, 11 to 12 a.m. That's on KBOO
Portland.
Listen, laugh, learn.
The farmer is the man that feeds them all.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, an excessive heat warning over Oregon and southwest Washington indicates triple-digit temperatures this weekend. A Biden administration acknowledgement of harm to Native communities done by Northwest dams has a glaring omission. And in national news, a new California law requires bars and nightclubs to offer roofie testing kits to patrons. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, July 2nd, 2024. I'm Eric Leuschner. Extreme heat is on its way to Oregon and much of the West Coast this weekend. The National Weather Service has issued an excessive heat warning that starts at noon on Thursday, July 4th, and lasts through Sunday night. Dangerously hot conditions are expected with temperatures between 100 and 105 degrees. Nighttime temperatures will also stay high, meaning there's less time to recover from the heat. The excessive heat warning covers northwest and west central Oregon, plus southwest Washington. Heat-related illnesses are significantly more common during extreme heat events like these, so it's important to know the signs of heat exhaustion and heat stroke. Jason Helper from the Mayo Clinic News Network explains.
Your body is like a car's engine. If it starts to overheat, the warning light goes on, and that is heat exhaustion.
Which is where you feel nauseous or dizzy, or you just don't feel right, and you're sweating profusely.
Anyone at any age can suffer from heat exhaustion. High temperatures, particularly when paired with high humidity, are the primary cause.
Ways to prevent it include hydrating a lot, dressing appropriately for the weather, going into an air-conditioned place when you don't feel quite right, taking breaks if you're outside working.
Without prompt treatment, heat exhaustion can lead to heat stroke, a life-threatening condition that requires emergency medical attention.
The management of heat stroke is giving them fluids and dunking them into a cool ice water bath as quickly as possible.
A common symptom of heat stroke is an altered mental state or behavior.
The pearl, I always say, is to look for confusion. If they are confused, they are having heat stroke. If anybody is in the heat and they're feeling nauseous and just not quite right, they should take a break, hydrate with cool water, and just sit down for a little bit and let their body cool down.
For the Mayo Clinic News Network, I'm Jason Howland.
During the heat wave, people are encouraged to check on their friends and neighbors who might live alone or not have access to air conditioning. Officials say now is the time to prepare. Drinking plenty of water and staying in an air-conditioned room is recommended. If people do have to be outside, they should wear light, loose-fitting clothing and try to limit any strenuous activities to early in the morning or late in the evening. Rivers and lakes can offer some relief, but it's still important to be cautious getting in the water. Multnomah County is preparing to open cooling shelters as it gets hotter later this week. In the meantime, library branches and community centers can be alternative places to keep cool during the day. Much of the United States is heading into extreme heat this weekend, Oregon included. Climate scientists say there's plenty of evidence for a warming planet, but national polling seems to indicate support for key solutions to combat climate change has slipped. Advocacy groups say it's important to maintain key messaging amid a sea of misinformation. Mike Moen reports.
New polling shows most Americans still favor non-fossil fuel energy sources. But support for certain renewables is not quite as strong these days, and a Wisconsin expert hopes the direct impacts of climate change bolster messaging. The Pew Research Center is out with a new public opinion report on energy choices. 63% of those surveyed support the U.S. taking steps to become carbon neutral by 2050. But support for expanding wind and solar development has gone down from well past 80% to around 75%. Dr. Kieran Gallagher of the group Clean Wisconsin feels it's important to remind residents that climate change is happening at their doorstep.
We can point to the drought that affected our farmers last summer, and then in stark comparison, the intense rain and flooding events we've been experiencing this spring and summer.
She mentions last summer's smoky air from Canadian wildfires as another example. Advocates say these events might help convince the public to regain confidence in renewables as policymakers try to limit climate disasters. Local opposition has surfaced for various solar and wind projects. Gallagher says it's not surprising, adding that misinformation and polarization are driving changing attitudes. Grid operators warn that as more coal plants and other fossil sources come offline to meet clean energy goals, reliability issues might surface in the short term as energy demand soars. But Gallagher says it doesn't mean wind and solar are failing to keep the lights on.
These last few winters, the energy source that has failed is gas power plants. Solar and wind and some of the recent storms have outperformed more than they expected.
The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission points out that in a 2022 winter storm that impacted parts of the Midwest, 90% of prolonged outages were linked to fossil sources. The Pew survey also shows Americans aren't quite as eager to purchase an electric vehicle compared with a few years ago. Gallagher echoes predictions from agencies such as the Bureau of Labor Statistics that organic growth still will happen. She says people taking advantage of federal incentives right now to bring EVs within reach are likely to spur word of mouth.
We're going to see these numbers continuing to grow as more people talk to their friends and families that have been early adopters of these technologies.
This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
The Biden administration finally acknowledged the, quote, historic, ongoing, and cumulative damage and injustices caused to Northwest tribal nations by the construction of the Columbia River Dam. This in a 73-page report from the Department of Interior. The report concludes, quote, the government afforded little, if any, consideration to the devastation the dams would bring to tribal communities, including to their cultures, sacred sites, economies, and homes, end quote. Yet already critics point out a glaring omission. The damages done to Native people were not unintentional consequences of dam building. Government documents from the 1940s and 1950s obtained by OPB and ProPublica show federal officials knew and openly discussed the, quote, Indian problem. The negative impact dam building had on tribes was understood in advance and intentionally pursued. In one such case, Sam Hutchinson, then the regional director for the Bureau of Fisheries, described the drowning of the last major tribal fishery at Cielo Falls through the construction of the Dalles Dam as a benefit. Quote, the Indian commercial fishery would be eliminated and more fish would reach spawning grounds in better condition, end quote. Columbia River Treaty tribes obtained these documents several years ago through a Freedom of Information Act request. Yet these documents failed to make their way into the Department of Interior's report last week. The department declined to comment on why they omitted these documents. The devastation brought by the extensive damming of the Pacific Northwest's largest river through the 1940s and 1950s is immense. Fishing was and remains central not only to the diet of Columbia River tribes, but also to religious practice and commercial trade. Last week's report from the Department of the Interior was part of a 10-year agreement between the federal government and tribes to restore Columbia River Basin salmon populations. Their numbers once totaled more than 10 million in the Columbia. An organization called the Conservation Fund says it's protected more than 1 million acres of forest land across 21 states. That includes projects to protect forests in Oregon. KBOO reporter Patches has more.
The Conservation Fund, which works to protect land and nature across the U.S., has announced it has protected more than 1 million acres of working forest lands across the country, including in Oregon. The organization's milestone comes as forests are rapidly disappearing, as much as 13 million acres in the next few decades. The Conservation Fund's Brian Dangler says valuable work continues on the protected land, which adds to the nearby economy.
The beauty of these projects is that the receipts from the timber sustainable management of forests, timber harvest, really helps local folks to keep the schools going, the fire department, the local services.
The Conservation Fund has helped protect forest land in the Columbia River Gorge near Hood River and Deep River Woods near Astoria. Nationwide, it secured forests in 21 states. The organization uses community and private partnerships to protect nature. Dangler says large intact forests support jobs in rural communities through logging, trucking, building roads, and other activities.
And of course, the wildlife habitat that goes along with it. Good forest management usually improves wildlife habitat for lots of different species.
Dangler says development is one of the biggest threats to forests and that it's important to keep forest lands as units rather than smaller parcels.
Eventually, more and more development just nibbles away at these large intact forests. It's very important for them to be large in landscape. It's like Humpty Dumpty. You can't put it back together again when it gets fragmented so much.
For KBOO News and the Oregon News Service, I'm Patches.
Monday was the first day that many California bars and nightclubs will be required to offer drug testing devices at the bar to help prevent people from being unknowingly drugged. These businesses will offer kits that can test for date rape drugs or roofies laced in someone's drink. These are most often sedatives that can be a way to take advantage of someone or commit sexual assault. Bars with Type 48 licenses, ones that aren't required to sell food, will have to post a sign advertising the service and offer the test kits at little to no cost. The test kits could come in the form of strips, stickers, or straws, and must test for at least one controlled substance. California State Assembly member Josh Lowenthal was the author of the bill. He told NBC San Diego, quote, it's about showing these perpetrators that if they do try and do it, then they're in peril and they could be caught, end quote. Some bar owners worry about the impact the signage may have on customers, but others say the effort to crack down on sexual assault is more important. A report from the Department of Justice indicates that only 310 of every 1,000 sexual assaults are reported to law enforcement. California is the first state in the nation to mandate that these kits be carried at bars and nightclubs. Supporters of the bill say they would like to see this requirement expanded to other businesses with liquor licenses in the future. The Supreme Court gives former President Trump a huge win in terms of immunity, which might apply to charges of election interference. A new poll finds future court appointments are crucial for voters, and President Biden continues to face post-debate calls to leave the race. With more on the story, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Clearly lays out areas where his involvement with the executive branch can be used and cannot be reviewed criminally. Can't even question his motive. And that's deeply troubling.
David Becker with the Center for Election, Innovation, and Research says the conservative majority on the Supreme Court has given former President Donald Trump a major win, but dealt a massive blow to democracy. The court says a president may claim criminal immunity for official acts, including some like those around January 6th. The decision's timing also may fatally delay the federal charges that Trump tried to overturn 2020. And Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson is one of the three liberal justices, warning the decision will allow presidential power to be used for evil ends.
But once we say, no criminal liability, Mr. President, you can do whatever you want, I'm worried that we would have a worse problem than the problem of the president feeling constrained to follow the law while he's in office.
New data shows that nearly three quarters of voters say future Supreme Court picks are a crucial issue in the presidential race. Sarah Harris is with Stand Up America.
It's important to think about generations after us because many of the people who could potentially be put on the bench will be on there for 50 to 60 years, potentially, as justices continue to be appointed younger and younger.
Following last week's lackluster presidential debate, President Joe Biden's campaign aims to call members of the Democratic Party. Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear is one of several being discussed as a possible replacement. But like the others, he says he's sticking with Biden.
Only the president can determine his future as a candidate. He is the candidate, and as long as he is, I'm supporting him.
So far, polls seem to show little or no impact from the debate, and new data suggests more than 7 in 10 voters have already decided. A presidential historian, Douglas Brinkley, compares Biden's position to that of President Lyndon B. Johnson, who pulled out of his race in 68. Brinkley tells CBS that Biden needs to speak to those beyond his family and loyal supporters.
Bill Clinton and Barack Obama may be the deciders. If they can team up, they're probably the only ones that can break through the Joe Biden and his White House team and maybe say to Biden, you got to step down. Let's turn it over to Kamala.
Finally, former Trump advisor Stephen Bannon spoke to a crowd before starting a 4-month prison sentence for defying a congressional subpoena over January 6th. Bannon and Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene were heckled when he called himself a political prisoner.
This is what it takes to stand up to Joe Biden. To Joe Biden, I'm proud to do it.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, how are you? You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News in Depth. At 6 o'clock, it's Transpositive PDX. Then at 7, KBOO's special LGBTQIA2S+ panel, live from the KBOO studio. This week's panel focuses on queer business owners. Tonight's weather will be bright and clear with an overnight low of 51 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be hot and sunny with a high of 82. Today in history, in 1937, aviator Amelia Earhart and navigator Fred Noonan are last heard from over the Pacific Ocean while attempting to make the first equatorial round-the-world flight. The quote of the day is from Polish poet and Nobel Prize winner Wisława Szymborska, born this day in 1923. She wrote, quote, "The going's rough, and so we need the laugh of bright incisors, molars of goodwill. Our times are still not safe and sane enough for faces to show ordinary sorrow." The Department of the Interior will move the Substance Management Office out of the Fish and Wildlife Department. It's an important move for Alaskans who rely heavily on wild foods. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Alaska's heavy reliance on wild foods has prompted the U.S. Interior Department to take an unusual step. As KMBA's Rhonda McBride reports, it has pulled the Federal Office of Subsistence Management out from under the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Alaskans eat more wild fish and game than any other state, about 18,000 tons a year. A lot of food that goes mostly to Alaska Native dinner tables. And in recognition of its importance, Interior Secretary Deb Haaland issued an order to transfer subsistence management to her office on July 15th. Sky Starkey, an attorney and longtime subsistence advocate, says it's a change that makes sense. He says U.S. Fish and Wildlife's authority to manage subsistence on federal lands began in 1999, after the state failed to pass a constitutional amendment for a rural subsistence priority. Starkey says back then, the move was viewed as temporary.
As an accident of history stayed that way. And this recent action by the secretary just corrects that.
Starkey says the Office of Subsistence Management's new home will help prioritize subsistence in Alaska.
Certainly putting them under the secretary's office highlights their mission, gives them independence and more strength, and a lot more control over their mission and their budget.
Alaska's U.S. House Representative Mary Peltola, a Democrat, pitched the idea of moving the office at the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention last year. In a statement, Peltola praised the Interior Secretary for taking action and mentioned her late husband, Buzzy Peltola, who had a long career with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. She said she and her husband worked together on this proposal. I know he'd be proud to see it happen, she said. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
An arts nonprofit is partnering with Yellowstone National Park for a summer-long art installation at the park's five entrances. Yellowstone Public Radio's Olivia Wheats reports.
This is the fourth year of Mountain Time Arts' Yellowstone Revealed series that aims to foster appreciation for Indigenous culture and tribal connections to the land. This year, the project features a traditional teepee at each entrance. Visitors can scan a QR code on the teepee to learn more about the structures and read stories about bison. Victoria Cheyenne is a board member with a nonprofit and is Northern Cheyenne and Aymara.
So I think the connection is powerful and spiritual, and the stories that people have to tell about bison are important, and they're deeply connected to the homelands of what has become Yellowstone National Park.
The teepees are on display until early September. A closing ceremony is planned in Gardner near the Roosevelt Arch on September 9th. I'm Olivia Wheats at the Center of the West in Cody.
Minnesota's Prairie Island Indian Community has opened a recreational cannabis dispensary. Island Paisy, which means grass, is a native cannabis company owned by the tribe. Prairie Island Tribal Council President Grant Johnson says the dispensary represents many important milestones and will create revenue for the tribe. He also says it allows them to offer high-quality cannabis products to consumers. The tribe is partnering with the White Earth Nation, carrying Native American-grown and branded cannabis from White Earth. The tribe's newly formed Cannabis Regulatory Commission will regulate the business. Visitors to the business must be 21 or older. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A new poll finds many voters around the country are paying attention to the potential implications of the upcoming election on the future of the Supreme Court in the United States. Supreme Court reform advocates argue the justice system is broken and is putting fundamental freedoms in jeopardy. Alex Gonzalez has more.
Former President Donald Trump has taken credit for placing three conservative justices on the U.S. Supreme Court. And on Monday, the court awarded him a major win by giving him immunity from criminal prosecution for what are known as official acts taken while in office. New data show that a majority of voters in Arizona and around the country are paying attention and understand the impact the next president could have on the future of the U.S. Supreme Court. Sarah Harris with Stand Up America says whomever wins the election in November could select and appoint up to four new justices, reshaping the legal precedent in the U.S. for years to come.
It's important to think about generations after us because many of the people who could potentially be put on the bench will be on there for 50 to 60 years, potentially, as justices continue to be appointed younger and younger.
Harris adds that four of the current justices on the bench will be in their 70s in 2025 when the next president takes office. She says their recent poll found nearly 75% of voters say the selection and confirmation of future justices will be important when deciding who to support in the upcoming presidential and Senate races. Some argue the scandal-ridden Supreme Court makes the case for term limits. The 10-year Establishment and Retirement Modernization Act, led by Democrat Congressman Hank Johnson, would create 18-year term limits for current and future justices, as well as provide two appointments to the court in each four-year presidential term. Harris says the justices should not be treated as if they're above the law.
No one deserves power for life. What we've seen is that the court cannot regulate itself, and so having term limits would be really, really important.
The Term Act was initially introduced in 2022, but died in committee. It was reintroduced last year, but there's been no action since. But that proposal and other Supreme Court reform initiatives have faced pushback from Republicans, who argue it would jeopardize the separation of powers between Congress and the court. For Arizona News Connection, I'm Alex Gonzalez.
AARP selected seven projects in Oregon to receive their Community Challenge grants. The money attached to these grants is over $94,000. Eric Tegedoff has more on which Oregon projects got the funds.
Seven projects have been chosen in Oregon to receive grants from AARP. The projects were selected for the Community Challenge Grant Program, which funds undertakings that can be turned around quickly. The grants total more than $94,000 for the Oregon projects. Stacy Triplett is with AARP Oregon.
These are all projects that are dreamt up in community. They're connected to either municipalities, local governments, or nonprofits who have a distinct need, and this was our way of collaborating with them, coming alongside and saying, yes, this is important for the 50-plus and their families.
This year, AARP awarded $3.8 million to more than 340 projects nationwide. The projects must be completed by December 15th. Triplett says many of the project proposals concerned emergency preparedness, and AARP chose one in Eugene to receive a $20,000 grant.
The Whitaker Community Council had a particularly compelling project, and they seemed ready to go to work using digital tools to connect folks during disasters.
Other winners include the Latino Community Association, which will offer a computer literacy program in Central Oregon, and Southwest Trails PDX, which will improve signs on a 46-mile trail network. Public park and pedestrian path improvements were also chosen in the cities of Independence and Monmouth, respectively, which recently received AARP Livable Communities designations. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Environmental justice advocates in Minnesota scored a recent victory. A recently passed state law aims to limit new pollution in communities that are already struggling with a disproportionate burden. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In the East Phillips neighborhood of Minneapolis, residents live just down the street from an asphalt mixing plant and an iron foundry. And for decades, they struggled with arsenic contamination from a former pesticide manufacturer.
We know that historically, there has been certain communities that are bearing the brunt of pollution, leading to increased health, environmental, economic, and social inequities.
Carolina Ortiz is with communities organizing Latina Power in Action. The Minnesota-based nonprofit helped push the state to pass a cumulative impacts law, which will take effect in 2026.
We are third in the nation to pass cumulative impacts. New York and New Jersey were first.
The law requires that when issuing operating permits, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency must consider more than the pollution directly emitted by a factory, power plant, or other facility. If the facility is in what's called an environmental justice area, the agency must also consider how the community has been affected by pollution over time.
It adds regulatory protections to environmental justice areas.
So Ortiz says the legislation is an important step towards preventing additional polluting businesses from setting up shop in long burden areas. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, July 2nd, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes David Rosenberg, Reed Johnson, and Patches. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Alex Gonzalez, Eric Tegedoff, Mike Mullen, Antonia Gonzalez, Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and the Mayo Clinic News Network. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.